Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit olathekia.com.
Now it is time for very serious football talk with the man who hates money almost as much as he hates the idea of a healthy sleep schedule.
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
The man who has so many children, his wife figured he wouldn't even notice if she bought a few chickens and ducks for the backyard.
We could have an episode where we just have my children appear on the show.
I would
in
love.
Ascending order. So we'll do like a minute of Lucas, then 2 minutes of Isabel, then 3 minutes of... Man, I have a lot of kids.
The man who does all of this while being a lawyer in a state that has snow all 12 months of the year.
Until it freezes, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I actually felt very at home driving through southern Iowa. It was snow everywhere, and people were slowing down to like 40. It was adorable. I was driving slowly, but I literally was hanging my head out the window screaming, and that was disconcerting.
It's Seth Kaiser of the Chief in the North newsletter, The Athletic, and the Times Hours podcast on Almost Entirely Sports.
You're not dreaming. It's not Christmas yet. It is, I guess, almost Thanksgiving, and you can have this to be thankful for. Back-to-back Tuesdays with the one and only Seth Kaiser. You can read his work at the Chief of the North newsletter. You can hear him on the Times Ours podcast. New episode dropped earlier today, and we didn't have any breaking news totally derail it this time, Seth. It's a huge victory for us.
I like that. It's you take whatever wins you can get. The older I get, and I am old, the more I understand the value of taking the small wins.
Yeah.
Because big wins are a lot rarer than people think.
Yeah, and I guess we didn't. We talked right before. I guess it was the day, a couple days before Odell Beckham and all of that. And we weren't even really talking about him with the Chiefs. But if anyone didn't catch that particular part, we had just finished an episode of Times Ours.
Oh my gosh!
Literally. I mean, it was between 1 and 2 minutes after we had stopped recording. No, I think I was still recording because I had to do the ads. But it was literally within minutes of our finished recording. Odell Beckham goes and signs with the Rams. And, I didn't really watch the NFL or the Chiefs game this week. But I'm pretty sure, I'm guessing that because Beckham went to the Rams, the Chiefs offense is totally stuffed at this point. And I'm sure the NFL had a very normal weekend. Seth, I don't know if you paid attention, but...
Well, if there's one thing we can say for darn sure, it's that the Rams offense was about to explode. No, the NFL is every week it gets weirder and weirder this year.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, last year it was weird too. And it just feels there's no like dominant teams.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, oh, yeah, but I mean, there's at least a couple. It was the Rams, right? Even though they've lost the week before, though they're the only, great team. Well, the Bucs were lost as well. The Rams are the only other team I've had the discussion with. The Bills, no one can figure out what they're going to do week to week. The Titans are like the most consistent team of the last month and a half.
By a country mile. So they've got two losses. They lost to the Cardinals in week one, who obviously ended up being excellent. No shame in that. Then they lost to the Jets in week four. And then they went on to beat the Bills, Chiefs, Colts, Rams, and Saints in consecutive weeks.
Right. And
know that anybody believes in them.
Right. Well, and they had, I mean, the funny thing is their Colts win was fluky, their Saints win was fluky, their Bills win was fluky, but boy, did they house the Chiefs.
True.
And that's, one thing that's going to be kind of interesting for me. Despite what happened there, I got to be honest, on a neutral field or in Tennessee next week, I'd take the Chiefs. And maybe that's just me, like, just disregarding what they're doing. But, maybe they need to win, four more weeks in a row. Although, I'm not really convinced that them beating the Texans or Jags or Steelers is going to prove much to me. The Patriots are playing pretty well. But they're another team that, are they really that good? I don't think they are. They just destroyed the Browns. This is like the weekend for weird blowouts.
Yeah. I mean, you got the Cowboys, who obviously the Chiefs have next, and maybe we'll talk about them at some point. I don't know. But last week, they got beat by the Broncos, who this week got beat while looking like an orange circus peanuts, got beat handily by the Eagles, and in turn, the Cowboys went and blew out the Falcons by 40.
So the
Eagles are better than the Cowboys, although I'm pretty sure the Cowboys have beaten the Eagles already.
The Cowboys, they're another team. What are they? Like, until last week, everyone's like, oh, man, they're coming for it. You know what I mean? And then, and I just don't know. And I really think maybe this year, maybe I'm way off on this, but for most teams, and there's a caveat to this, for most teams, almost every team in the NFL at this point, it seems like styles make fights.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams, and they actually did a really good job talking about this, who got just blown out by the Niners. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't even close.
Who the Niners last week, Kyle Shanahan's hot seat, turned up to 9, and then they blew out the Rams.
Yeah, and so the Rams are a good example of, they're a team that has built themselves very around the modern NFL. Mm-hmm. They're going to put all their resources into pass rush, into coverage, and even their defensive scheme is, if people talk about that, it's like almost like dialing up Fangio stuff, like up to, 11, mm-hmm. and daring teams to run. And the Niners were like, we love to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's like all we do, even when we shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good example of styles making fights. And it makes me just think that with as much parity as in the league right now, you're going to see more and more, well, Team A beat Team B and Team B beat Team C, therefore Team C should lose to Team A. And it's like, no, Team C is actually going to beat Team A by 40.
Yep.
And I just think that's true of the vast majority of teams in the NFL, with a couple of exceptions. And I think those teams are the ones that maybe have the best chance at making a run, because they're not going to be so matchup dependent.
So I want to dig in on some of that, because I think some of that's extremely interesting. And I am confident right now that at least two types of Chiefs fans are listening to this show right now. At least two Chiefs fans are listening to the show is what I mean.
I'm confident in that.
But I think there are at least two types that heard you say that if the Chiefs played at Tennessee next week, that you'd pick the Chiefs. I think some portion, I don't know the percentage, I would hate to even guess. Some percentage of Chiefs fans listening right now went, hell yeah, they would. Chiefs are back. Everything's good again. And some portion of Chiefs fans would go, Seth, would you like to review? Would you need my Game Pass login so you can go rewatch Chiefs Titans? So
not that would help with Game Pass.
That's a good point. That's fair. Would you like to watch the broadcast view again from somewhere? So I'm extremely interested by that, because one thing, I had a little like half hour kind of pregame window to talk about the game before it happened on Sunday night, and one thing that I pointed out that I'm going to obviously repeat, because any time that I'm correct about something, I'm going to beat that into the ground. I'm only human. I said, like, hey, I really think that the most interesting part of this is that after two kind of lukewarm victories, wins that were wins but didn't feel great, the Chiefs are going back to prime time against a team that everyone thinks is pretty good. The Raiders are a pretty good team. They're, maybe in the season right around 500. Maybe a little bit better. Who's to say? But if the Chiefs go out and win this game in some sort of dominant fashion like we haven't seen this year, the narrative will change in 3 hours from the Chiefs are broken to the Chiefs are back. And that is exactly what happened. I was not predicting that, for the record. But if that happened, we were going to see that kind of transformation. So walk me through how much that game ended up sort of being validating to the Chiefs' continual spot in all of this to you, and why you would take them over the Titans if they had a rematch tomorrow.
Sure. So it's not just the Raiders game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few things that go into it. There's also the Packers game. Well, they didn't have Aaron Rodgers, and that's a conversation to be had. Mm-hmm. But the question that I would answer, what I would ask someone, because I love to answer questions with a question. It's what Jesus did, That's actually true, but I'm not going to dive into that now.
Where do the similarities stop, Seth, between you and Jesus Christ of Nazareth?
The question I would ask someone is, do you believe the Packers are a good football team?
Mm-hmm.
And if they say yes, then I would follow up with, is the only reason they are a good football team is the existence of Aaron Rodgers? Mm-hmm. And most people would say no, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people would say, well, their defense is good. At least people think it is.
They shut out the Seahawks for the first time in like a decade, so that's a good tick on that.
Which is quite interesting, right? 1 week after, well, it's no big deal. Their linebacker and safety play, that matters. So are the Packers a Super Bowl contender or not? If you believe yes, then it's not just the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. There are probably about half the teams in the league the Chiefs should be favored to beat if they have Chad Henne at quarterback. Because that's what Super Bowl contenders should look like. Mm-hmm. Now, does that make that win nearly as impressive because Aaron Rodgers out? No, but it's still a good win. Also, what I saw in film against the Packers, and you and I talked about this all last week, where I was like, I'm not totally convinced the Chiefs weren't within, what was it, a gnat's hiccup?
it was some sort of bug
yeah.
sound or a fly's
body function
or a spider's sneeze or one of those.
Yep. And I remember, yeah, you hung on to it the rest of that Time Zars episode.
I couldn't let
but
it
they
go.
Really were extremely close on multiple plays. And I was like, I'm not so sure they were 13 points bad against the Packers, rather just being really unlucky and in a different way than they'd been unlucky previously. And I think you saw that come to fruition against the Raiders, against a inferior defense, not a bad defense, but not as good as the Packers, and not as good in specific areas. Linebacker play, I'm coming to think, like really fast, really good linebacker play is huge against the Chiefs, especially with the way teams are playing them right now. And so it's not just the Raiders game. It's that's giving me more confidence in them. It's how the defense has played multiple games in a row, because it was easy to say, well, it's just Daniel Jones and the Giants, who, to be fair, in some other games have shown quite a bit of fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, the Packers do have playmakers, and the Chiefs largely dominated up front that game too.
Yep.
And it's not like the Packers' offensive line was all out, right? And then to see them do it against a good offense that has given them problems in the past, and then also, again, their offensive line dominating up front, those are the things that give me confidence. And the other thing with, like, the Titans, I just don't think Mahomes is going to play literally the worst game of his career again against mm-hmm. them. Because he was bad. And we talked about it ad nauseum, so we don't need to talk more about it. But he was genuinely terrible against the Titans. Mm-hmm. Not just bad for him, but, like, genuinely bad. You change that to just, like, the normal, quote-unquote, bad for Mahomes, and they still put up 14 to 20 points. But he was just bad.
Yeah.
And so all those things kind of come together where you see the way they're playing right now. You see stylistically what they're doing. Those are reasons why I'm feeling a lot better. There's still some of those lingering issues that exist. And I'm going to feel even more better mm-hmm. depending on how Sunday goes. Because the Dallas, things have been kind of culminating to this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, now we know, even if they lose to Dallas, because the Raiders game was it, right? It's like, they lose to the Raiders, they've, like, hit, like, you almost got to run the table kind of territory and stuff.
Absolutely.
Now, with the way things have gone with the rest of the AFC West, they can lose to the Cowboys, and I'm not sure they will, and I'm confident for a lot of things, but they can lose and still go into the bye week saying, okay, with the way the rest of the AFC West is looking, we don't have to run the table to make it to the playoffs. We don't have to, you know, we got to win it, you know, more than half of our games for sure. But then seeding kind of falls out the window, right? If you lose to Dallas, seeding kind of goes out the window. Right now, if they beat Dallas, you could have some conversations.
Yeah, they're 7-4 going into the bye, and right now the teams in the AFC. Titans are 8-2. The Bills are 6-3. The Ravens are 6-3. The Steelers are a hilarious 5-3-1.
Gosh, that is hilarious. And so you see, there's an opportunity to move there.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of curious about all that, but that's kind of like a summary of where I'm feeling in terms of optimism. Like, you can just kind of see it.
There are two sort of splits that I want to explore here, and kind of two branches of that feeling. And one we already, you talked about a little bit this morning on Times Ours, which again, people should subscribe to wherever they get their podcast. But we can also dig in a little bit here I'm just start with this one of the game we saw on Sunday night.
We did see the Raiders do a little bit less of the two deep safety stuff, and we saw the Chiefs taking advantage of all sorts of different defensive matchups and all of that. Explain to me where you're at in terms of the Raiders tried to get too cute, and that's a reason that the Chiefs were ultimately able to punish them to the tune of a 40 burger. And how much of it is just, well, the Chiefs just played their football again, and they've beaten cover two looks, two safety shells all the time in the past. This struggles were more new this year than the defenses were, if that makes sense. What is your split in terms of credit to the Chiefs and blame to the Raiders?
I think the Raiders certainly should face some blame for some of the stuff they were doing. I would note that as much as people want to talk about cover two, it's not like teams have only been playing cover two against the Chiefs.
Right.
It's been a high percentage, but it's not like it's been 90% of the plays, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of things that go into determining why a team succeeds and fails against various coverages and that kind of stuff. And so I'm going to kind of, what we've seen now against the Raiders and what we saw to a much lesser extent because of some mistakes against the Packers, I really want to hammer on the fact that people keep talking about cover two, and the Chiefs have played cover two for years. Like, they've beaten tons of teams. Look, you can look at Mahomes' stats against cover two in previous years. They were really good against it. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this is something they've never seen. It's a very commonly seen thing. It kind of became the narrative mm-hmm. because he played a couple bad games and people were trying to figure out why. But like the cover two narrative was a thing even when they were moving the ball at a historic pace, which they were through the first, what, six games of the season, five mm-hmm. games of the season.
Yeah.
They were just turning the ball over constantly. And that's not because of cover two. And so I just don't buy into the narrative that much that this is this magical poison pill for the Chiefs offense. I think Mahomes is learning how to play with a new offensive line, and I think he played a couple bad games. Andy Reid made a really good statement. He said the way he phrased it was Patrick Mahomes went longer than any quarterback in history without going through a slump.
Yep.
And people just are looking for answers, and maybe the answer is sometimes you just fail. And there's not some secret formula to it. Because, again, in 2019, you know, after the Niners, you know, in 2020, it was cover three. And before that, it was cover zero. And we're running out of numbers, is what I'm seeing. You know? It's like, I mean, to be fair, cover six is pretty prevalent in the league at this point, so there you go.
Right.
But I think the Raiders definitely made things harder than they needed to on themselves, but credit to the Chiefs offense for recognizing that the Raiders were going to stick with their stuff and saying, okay, fine, we'll shred that, rather than sticking with cover two man beaters or cover two zone beaters. The other thing I would note, the stuff they were doing is stuff that would work against cover two as well. You know, a lot of these quick routes to the sideline or throws to the flat to the running back, a lot of these, the damage that they did in certain areas, whether it was in the seams or, I mean, they did stuff that would do damage to cover two as well.
Yeah.
So it's just weird to me, this narrative that, well, this is the old, well, no, this is what the Chiefs love to play against. That, what? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. I do think the Chiefs, they have more of a third weapon problem. And when their third guys, you know, the Williams of the world, the Hardmans of the world, you know, the Byron Pringles, the one, when they play well, you see a difference.
Mm.
And so that, I think it's much more that, but we'll get a chance to see against a very good Dallas defense. And at a certain point, I mean, people are going to have to find some kind of new narrative to spin.
Yeah. The third pass catcher thing, I think, is super interesting. Cause I tweeted right after the game, like, I think maybe the best sign out of that game is that you got a huge performance from Darrell Williams. You got your Byron Pringle and your Noah Gray touchdowns. You got Rashad Fenton and Daniel Sorensen making huge plays defensively. Fenton has had a very good season. Sorensen's had a very poor one. But to have a couple of guys who are not one of your three or four stars or leaders on the unit or whatever, to have a bunch of those more role player guys making a big impact, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't really think of a time this season when that's been the case. Somewhere in those first 4 weeks, maybe even against the Eagles, somebody else maybe had a larger role. I don't know. That game was basically Tyreek Hill, though, offensively. So that, I think, is super encouraging. But I also wonder if it might be part of your answer to the other path of that, which is that I think you said earlier that there's some stuff that's not necessarily 100% of the way back or there. Maybe that's also in part just needing to see things for more than one game. But strictly offensively, what are you thinking, hey, this still isn't quite right, or this is something that I'm still a little bit skeptical of?
You know, on the offensive side of the ball, I'm feeling really confident. They definitely – they need someone who can be that third guy consistently. Mm-hmm. I think they want that to be Clyde. And considering, like, the way that they're now using the offense, what's going to kill me? Mm-hmm. It's going to actually kill my soul mm-hmm. if Clyde gets healthy and they come back and they start running a bunch of stretch stuff to the sideline again and stop utilizing the running back as much. And I'm going to have to be like – because normally I would say there must be something they're seeing that makes them not utilize the guy that way. But every time they do it with Clyde, I'm like, he looks really good doing that. What am I missing? Mm-hmm. And it's driving me crazy. But, you know, you can't really count on a running back to be your third guy, generally speaking.
Yeah.
It's just too dependent on everything else. Now, maybe they kind of have like almost like a modified version of like the 0-3 offense where their third guy is the offensive line. And what they start doing is just running a ton of power gap and killing teams with it, that like which they really can. You and I, like, we've been kind of on the same page. Like, when you and me are screaming, like, maybe you should run the ball a little more.
Yeah.
That means teams should. And we just saw it. I mean, that means, well, this team should.
Right.
In a certain way. And you see it, like, against the Raiders. When they want to gain 5 free yards, it looks like they can do it at will. And for that 0-3 Chiefs team, their third guy was, well, you know, the offense was kind of built around Priest Holmes, and the offensive line, different league, so I understand you can't do it the exact same way. But that offensive line was one of their weapons, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this line really does have some specific skills to where they can, you know, formulate it that way. So I think they've got it in place, but I would say that third guy, because eventually what you're going to see, in my opinion, it's not going to be cover two zone. It'll be some version of pattern match or man coverage with a two-guy shell over the top mm-hmm. where they're going to say, we are going to press the bejesus out of Kelce. Mm-hmm. We are going to have two guys trailing Hill everywhere. We're also going to have a guy haloing Kelce, and we're going to be in press man across the board everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Show us you can beat it.
Yeah.
And they need one guy who can, or they need to be able to schematically do something about it. Now, the thing to do schematically about that, with all that effort to stop Kelce and Hill, one thing they could do is spread the offense out and say, hey, let's run for 8 yards a pop until they say, good God, we can't do this anymore.
Right.
But until they show the ability to do that, they're going to need someone to step up. They keep saying Gordon. They keep saying Gordon. Yeah.
I think he outsnapped Mecole Hardman for probably the first time on Sunday.
And his snap count's definitely going up.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I think you're going to see, you might see something there. It maybe that really is it, right? You know, maybe because it is still November, we'll see. Maybe suddenly, like by December, January, everyone's talking about the three-headed monster of, you know, Hill, Kelce, and Gordon. But so far, I just haven't seen much of it. So, but I mean, he is blocking well. He's running his routes. He's doing his thing. And Reed's saying that he thinks it's going to come. I'm harnessing my inner Nate because he's not here. So that would be the biggest thing, though, because Mecole Hardman has shown that he can't consistently be that guy. On games where he is that guy, because of the matchup or the role, or if he's just on that day, he doesn't have the yips with his hands, you can see how much better the Chiefs are. And so that would be the question there. For me, the questions are primarily on defense, though, because they were so bad earlier in the year. Whereas the offense, even with the third weapon question, when they weren't turning the ball over, they're still at this point. Do you know how hard it is to be one of the best offenses in the league and turn the ball over? We've been over this.
Yes. Yes.
So
it's ridiculous.
I have a lot of faith in the offense with that line, with those two primary weapons, with Mahomes, and with some guys that do have some skill sets that can help out with Clyde or, you know, I mean, any number of useful running backs, because you and I have talked about this. It's mostly about the scheme, mm-hmm. mostly about the line. I think Clyde can do a few things that add 5% here and there, and that'll be important in some games. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think they've got it. Defense, they're still giving way too many snaps to Sorensen. And I didn't even give you a chance to ask the question, but I'm assuming it's what worries.
Yeah. Let me just give you real quick. I wanted to at least tie off this loose thread here. On this is not full snap counts. This is from wide receiver routes run on Mahomes' 50 dropbacks.
Tyreek Hill had 41. Byron Pringle had 34. DeMarcus Robinson had 23. Gordon had 20. Hardman had 17. Marcus Kemp had 1. And I just sort of... I'm glad that Byron Pringle scored a touchdown and ended up with 4 catches and I think had one nice little first down conversion and like an instant, just like snap, throw, first down situation. But not... I don't think that's the end of that conversation for the rest of the year. I don't think that Darrell Williams or Byron Pringle has solved that. But yeah, so
that would be surprising.
It would be, yes, to be very generous. Okay, yeah. So tell me about the defense. What you're still worried about, and you know what? I think it's okay to use the name of the player who has become this year's Voldemort because he had an interception on Sunday.
Yeah. Sorensen got his pick. I mean, honestly, he kind of stole it from Juan Thornhill.
He really did, man. That actually makes me even more mad than the touchdown he gave up against the Packers because it could have been a good turnaround for Thornhill. And that jump ball that Sorensen caught is going to get him an extra 40 snaps next week.
And don't think that I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
If I were worried, like Spagnuolo's scheme is clearly coming along. The pass rush is looking better. Clark's playing well, which has been huge. Mm-hmm. Ingram has come in and added some much-needed physicality, another edge presence. Jones is playing like an absolute superstar. If you get to rewatch a game, focus on Jones a little. He just pops out, man. I mean, it's so much fun. Rashad Fenton is playing really well, really, really well. Legere Sneed is playing really well. Ward has been an average NFL starting cornerback, like a dude who deserves to start at corner for 3 years now. And those guys, we talked about this with Bashaud Breeland, those guys are hard to find. Mm-hmm. Guys who are consistently decent.
Yep.
And so, I mean, you know, Thornhill's playing well. Matthew played out of his mind against the Raiders. It's all coming together. You see what Willie Gay Jr. is doing. Like the Nick Bolton pick in the second round, watching him carry one of those seam routes against the Raiders... I thought, maybe. Like, maybe. You saw a little more spring in his step than when you had Hitchens in that role. Now, I don't think Bolton's ever going to be a good cover corner. But given how strong he is and physical he is against the run and how well he tackles, because he doesn't just tackle hard, he tackles well.
Yeah.
And I mean, he stops guys in the tracks, all that. If he can just be even, like, okay with some things to hide him a little... That's not a terrible second-round pick. Mm-hmm. That's actually not bad at all. And Willie Gay Jr., I think, looks like a legitimately really good linebacker. That said, that was a lot of positive stuff.
I forgot this is going to end with you talking about what you're so concerned about.
Right, yep. That said, it is really still concerning to me what they are deciding to do with... snap counts and who is getting on the field and when, and that's still very, very, very concerning to me, both at linebacker and at safety. You still have Daniel Sorensen taking half the snaps, and that's too many.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, if you look at Daniel Sorensen's snap counts over the last few weeks, I mean, you got, starting with the Washington game, you got, percentage-wise, 32, 23, 45, 34, and 50. And I think his snap count was a little high against the Raiders because they pulled some guys.
Yeah, I wonder, you might be getting there anyway, but also I wonder how much do you think that it's an issue of the Chiefs valuing and evaluating those guys differently, and how much do you think it's the Chiefs valuing guys in different personnel sets, if that makes sense, the Raiders ended up throwing the ball a ton in this game, and so I'm looking at the snap count numbers now to try to get something concrete. Like Anthony Hitchens only played 44% of the snaps. Nick Bolton only played 35%. That's got to be the lowest percentage he's played in a while. I'm guessing that they pulled Nick Bolton off the field and left Dan Sorensen out there as a swap in a sub package to play a team that's throwing the ball a lot more. But yes. Should they be? I'm not saying, hey, that's a sign that they're doing that rightly. But where do you find the most like disagreement? Is it in sort of schematic
decisions like that or in talent evaluation, sure, or probably a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both, and I think you're really onto something there. They have certain ideas over who should be in what sub-packages.
Mm-hmm.
And that means teams, if the Chiefs aren't careful, and it's less so now that the Sorensen stuff became so blatant,
mm-hmm,
so glaringly obvious, that they've kind of helped alleviate that. But that does mean teams can, in theory, force the Chiefs into having worse players on the field. If I were a team, I would try to get the Chiefs into a dime look, because then Ben Neiman's going to come on the field in all likelihood, and Dan Sorensen's going to come on the field in all likelihood, and I would target those two guys to death,
mm-hmm,
and I would attack those guys to death. And that's where it's concerning for me, because I understand whatever concerns they might have. They've got a guy in Armani Watts who's been in the system for years, and I don't know what they think of him. I genuinely don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think he could play a whole lot worse in coverage than Sorensen has this year.
Yeah.
And I get that they really like Sorensen as a blitzer, but you can't tell me that Armani Watts, I mean, he's a fast, athletic guy. You're telling me he doesn't know how to blitzing of all assignments. Like when you hear, oh, someone's a really good blitzer. Any really athletic player should be a good blitzer.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the point is, it's the scheme that's designing a free run at the quarterback. And so that's where, like, and some guys show a little more knack for it. Like, L'Jarius Sneed shows a knack for it. Dan Sorensen, admittedly, shows a knack for it. But you can't tell me Armani Watts can't run down a quarterback.
Yeah.
And he is so much better an athlete. And frankly, I mean, he looked fine when he was out there against the Raiders, mm-hmm, didn't he? He almost had a pick. And he was around, like, he was going to lead the team in tackles just off one drive. And I'm watching him, and it's like, again, small sample size. But you're not asking him to be a star or even good. You're just asking him to not be terrible.
Yeah.
So I see that. I see that with Neiman, who Neiman is not as bad at his position as Sorensen has been at his position this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been a weak spot. And to me, anytime you're in a position to where you've got two guys that you can just get sniped on your defense, and you allow teams to dictate that based on their personnel, that's going to get picked up on, especially in the playoffs. And especially like a team like the Cowboys. I'm curious because like the Cowboys, in theory, if they want to run the ball a lot and they kind of, you know, if they box things up or something like that, that plays to the Chiefs' strengths because it gets Nick Bolton and Willie Gay on the field against the run. Sorensen's off the field. And they are a much better team from a personnel standpoint. The stubbornness of utilizing guys who are clearly not good is a problem. And that's something that I continue to just scratch my head about. I mean, Willie Gay is now a year and a half into the system. You're telling me he doesn't know how to do drops as a dime linebacker?
Yeah.
Like, that's just, it's goofy to me, and that's concerning for me moving forward. As well as the defense has played, and they played very well, and they deserve a lot of credit for it. Anytime, defense is as much about avoiding weaknesses as it is having strengths. And so I just don't want to see that get picked at again. And so that I've got a little PTSD from seeing it get picked at so much this year.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I think that is also a more helpful way of looking at it and talking about it than Spags is an idiot or Spags thinks that Dan Sorensen is literally Troy Polamalu. Like, that's both of those things I think are silly. But to say, hey, something's not happening quite right in some of these personnel decisions that are often being dictated by situations. Because like you said, then if you're an offense, you would play out of character, I would think. I would think you would play out of character from what you would prefer to do offensively if you can do it in a way that forces Ben Neiman and Dan Sorensen on the field and takes off Willie Gay and another linebacker maybe or whatever. Whatever
sure.
Sub-package ends up being there. Because if you can force those guys onto the field, yeah, we'll play ball that way instead of letting you play in base. Didn't the Chiefs and I remember keeping an eye out for this during the game, but I never went back to double check. I think the Chiefs got to spend a lot of that Packers game in base, which mm-hmm. is where they're at their best. You might have even mentioned, you might have been the one that said to keep an eye out for that. And so if I am crediting you to yourself, then that seems right for this show.
That I don't remember, so I'll say, yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Great. This is unrelated, but I mean, it's sort of related, but I was just jarred looking at all the snap count percentages because I believe the Raiders ran a total of 52 plays to the Chiefs' 76. And that is a that's a hefty split. 41-14 would suggest that, I suppose, but my goodness. I was just looking like, man, Chris Jones only played 33 snaps in this game?
Right.
That's crazy.
Well, and they definitely have been rotating him. And that's, I think that's good. I think you see a benefit from it. Although every now and then it makes me crazy because, like, you'll have snaps where Jones isn't in for, like, most of a drive.
Yeah.
And then, like, the team will have a few positive runs, and you are guaranteed to see something about, like, Jones being bad against the run or something. It's like, he's not even on the field, people. Like, that drives me insane.
Jones, Clark, and Wharton are the only defensive linemen that played more than half of the snaps in this game.
Interesting.
Reed's at exactly 50.
Huh. And Reed's been playing better, too, as of late. So there's a lot to like about the defense. There's a lot to like about it. Like, right now, it's kind of funny how much, you know, a month can change your perspective, right?
I'm kidding. That also changes standings a lot, in fairness.
Yeah, that's very true. I like that. Because, you know, a month ago, we were like, man, where's this defense remotely strong? But because they've made some personnel choices since then, and because some guys have just started playing better, right? Like, the way Frank Clark is playing right now, he's a strength on the defense. And having Ingram in there and Jones. So the defensive line right now is a strength. The linebacker room right now is a strength. The quarterback room right now is a strength. The safety room right now is a strength. All of these things should be good. I just, like, I get real uncomfortable when I've got two specific players that I'm uncomfortable with being on the field, and you know they're going to see a lot of snaps. But man, boy, they've been playing lights out the last 3 weeks. And if they hold, like, the Cowboys to, like, 24 or 20 or something like that, because Cowboys have a really good offense, and Dak Prescott's an exceptional quarterback, then I might just shut my yapper and let Spagnuolo do his thing.
Well, Seth, this is going to sound silly, but earlier I thought, well, I wonder if Seth and I are going to just have to talk about all the same things we talked about on Times R Us today, or if we're going to end up somewhere else. And we ended up somewhere extremely different, and I think that's fitting because that means not only can you go listen to the latest episode of Times R Us, you can just search for Times R Us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also go read an article that we talked about on Times R Us but did not talk about here tonight, Seth's new piece in the Chief of the North newsletter about Orlando Brown versus the Raiders. If you want to give a 30-second little preview or synopsis of what people can get there, I do think that it turned out super fun, because it's nice to get a closer look at Brown for the first time in a little bit. And that's at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. You can go to bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney. Just type that URL and it'll take you straight to the page to get the newsletter for just $12 a year. Give me the quick sales pitch or the quick takeaway from the Orlando Brown film review so people can go check it out.
The quick takeaway is that Brown has gotten a lot of flack that he doesn't really necessarily deserve this year. And this is the second time that I just decided to break down every single snap, because he was playing Ngakoue, who's an excellent pass rusher, not elite, but good. And he, by and large, dominated that matchup. He had a few tough losses, but I won the vast majority of them and helped dictate the flow of the game. And so you should check it out. It broke down every snap. And there's a couple of really funny video clips, like where he just manhandles him, and it's hilarious. I enjoyed writing it.
There'll be much more on the newsletter the rest of the week, including the weekly Patrick Mahomes charting, which I am really excited to watch because we've had a couple games as of late where it can be like, you know, it wasn't as bad as you thought, but, you know, or maybe it was actually very good and the Packers game just didn't work out. I'm excited to see you be able to chart Patrick Mahomes throwing for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. It's just been a little while, so that should be nice.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I look forward to being it wasn't actually quite as good as you guys thought. I do whatever the film tells me to. So hopefully that doesn't happen so people don't get mad at me.
You're just a dark vessel. You're just a husk for the film to inhabit and to spread the good word of whatever the film says. MNChiefsFan.substack.com. Plus, also, if you're not following Seth on Twitter, what are you doing? He's at RealMNChiefsFan, and you can follow him there. Thank you, Seth.
Thanks for having me.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We've had a very like woke hour here, I feel like.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Couple of food-based things for you here today. First, want to say that this is now the beginning. As you may have just heard the promo if you're listening live. If you didn't hear it,
live. I'll give you the info now. The beginning of our 23rd annual Sports Radio 810 Food Drive. And also, it's now easier than ever to donate. So if you want to get involved, here's what you can do. All the donations will go directly to those in need through the Bishop Sullivan Center and Mission Southside. And you can drop off your non-perishable items at all Kansas City area Aldi grocery stores on Thursday, November 18th through the 21st. Just look for the 810 bins. And also, you can stretch your donation further by shopping at Aldi. When you're shopping for all of your Thanksgiving deliciousness at Aldi, grab a few extra items and drop them in the 810 collection box at your local Aldi so you can help make someone's holiday special this year. Aldi, shop differently. I'm a big Aldi fan. Renee has made me a big Aldi fan because there's one pretty close to our house, and it's frequently like, hey, where'd this come from? This is wonderful. I haven't had it before. Oh, it came from Aldi.
Aldi's great.
It is.
The amount of times I have especially like when I was in high school on like summer basketball leagues and traveling and ended up in a hotel, and what's right next to the hotel? There's an Aldi's.
It's clutch.
We're getting all of our food from Aldi's while we're here.
You're doing the thing, though, that I did for a very long time that is so apropos, actually. My head's about to explode. You made it Aldi's, possessive.
Oh, true.
A-L-D-I,
also,
four letters.
And for the longest time, this was just when I was growing up, I thought it was like a convenience store. And part of that, again, was because my interactions with it were essentially traveling, right?
Right.
I'm at a hotel.
Right.
We're going inside.
The logo looks like it could
fast.
Be. Yeah, sure.
Always came in clutch. Thank you, Aldi.
Extremely clutch. Also, if you want to donate, but you're not going to make it to one of those sites this year, you can go to 810whb.com/food drive to make a donation online. You can make a $20 donation, and you'll automatically be entered to win great prizes like an autographed Travis Kelce helmet. And if you donate more, you can get more entries to win. Donate $100, get 5 entries.
I believe there's a Bobby Witt baseball bat in there as well.
Wow. Also, there's an online silent auction. You go to 810whb.com/food drive again, and there'll be links there for you to bid in the silent auction. Bobby Witt Jr. signed bat, Nick Bolton signed mini helmet, Whit Merrifield signed photo, Alex Gordon signed home run photo, Travis Kelce signed Super Bowl photo, signed Patrick Mahomes jersey, so much more. 810whb.com/food drive. Rudy, I am so glad that you said Aldi's possessively. It's incorrect. But it is incredibly helpful for the segue that I need to make right now. Do you know what
I'm happy to help.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not a clue.
I tweeted about this, but I hope you didn't see it.
Pretty sure I didn't. It might come to me, but I don't think I did.
Papa John's is debuting a new logo.
So that's why that's in the Google Doc. I just saw simply Papa John's at the very top of the Google Doc. I don't know anything about it.
The logo is very bland. It's very simple, very minimalistic. That's not the important part. It's just red text, sans serif, whatever. It kind of arches in the middle like the previous one does. And also, if you're unfamiliar, John Schnatter, no relation to our Blake Schneiders that I know of, John, the titular Papa John,
real he's Papa.
He's a real stinker. He's a real stinker, and I don't care for the man. Although because of his very, I would say,
his ingredients aren't fresh enough for you.
I would say it has no issue with the better ingredients or the better pizza. It's more about not having a better filter in terms of using racial slurs freely and openly. Would be my criticism. More so than the pizza or the ingredients or the garlic sauce.
It's a very difficult thing for rich white people.
I don't remember who it was that did the story. I'm just Googled Papa John like profile or whatever. There was an unbelievable story in GQ or something. Let's see here.
Chaotic Warrior asked if they're offering escorts with the pizza.
Did he have a thing with escorts also, I wonder? Oh, boy.
Well, I think that was Louisville. It was strippers, technically.
Oh, good grief. You're right.
Papa John is Louisville.
Bloomberg has a story called Papa John is Still Obsessed with Papa John's. So that rules. Read that story. The pictures are crazy. It's just a fever dream. Here's the thing with the logo. In the logo, one part of text has changed. There has been an edit to the logo, and presumably, based on my previous small amount of research earlier today, a change to the name of Papa John's. They have removed the apostrophe.
Papas.
No.
Papas.
It is Papa J-O-H-N-S. No, not Papa John possessives, but Papa John's. As in a plural of John's, a murder of John's.
A lot of John's.
So, the pizza no longer belongs to the bad, stinky, greasy Papa John. But now does it belong to all John's? Does this... Papa John's, all of you, welcome here. Or...
all John's. Bring us your sick John's. Bring us your poor John's. Bring us your John's.
Or are they now selling Father's Name the Jonathan instead of selling their stinky wet pizza? Is it, hey, come here, buy some Papa John's, okay? Here's my dad named Jonathan. You can have,
pizza.
You can get him for $12.99. Now, we are veering dangerously close to an actual my brother and me bit from like two episodes ago here. So I'm going to...
I was going to say Papa Shaq.
But... just call it Papa Shack. If
just
you're going to rebrand,
Papa
just be Papa's. Just say, hey, we're Papa's Pizza. We're Poppin' Pizza.
Home of the Shaq-a-roni.
Or, look, we know you try to get the John out of there. But this doesn't... but calling yourself... like, a friend of mine named Blake Johns tweeted at me as I tweeted. Said, wait a second. This pizza franchise now belongs to me. And it does. Because his last name is Johns, plural. Like, J-O-H-N-S with no apostrophe because it's a last name. You could be named John Johns, but that's not how the Papa John's pizza branding has worked all this time. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, bye, Mom.